Welcome, everyone, to the Runaways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek, the official, unofficial voice of the Marvel Cinematic Community. My name is Matt, and joining me, as always, is Pete. Hello, Pete.
It's the internet. Credibility isn't a thing. The Runaways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek for episode 307, Left Hand Path, is sponsored by Couples Therapy, maybe three times a week.
Pete, just like Dale and Stacy, things winding down a little bit here at old Fantastic Geek headquarters, put the Watchmen podcast season one to bed just in the last couple days, watched today the season finale of The Mandalorian, have yet to podcast that, and of course, after today, three more episodes of Runaways to watch and podcast. So a time of change, a change in the air towards the end of this year, this decade, but exciting times nonetheless.
If you are following the Mandalorian podcast by Fantastic Geek, you have the finale to watch and to listen to. We will podcast that tomorrow, Saturday, December 28th. And then we are extending the opportunity for you to win our raffle review on Apple Podcasts for a Funko Pop The Child figurine pre-ordered for you, will be sent right to you. So get yourself a review on there and eligible for that prize.
And that winner will be announced when we do the season one wrap for Mandalorian on the 4th. Pete, I see on the schedule that's also when we're doing the Runaways season three wrap. So my goodness, the convergence of things and stuff. Pete, I've been looking at this piece of paper for the last 5 weeks that goes from November 10th to now. I actually do have another one set for the next 3 months after that, but I can't believe we're in the home stretch here of this long stretch of fun podcasting.
About to set a Fantastic Geek record for podcasts in 1 month.
This is true. Also true, Pete, Runaways 307 has a summary. Take it to us now.
Gert, Carolina, and Chase try to break the spell of the Wiz Phone Corvus on Molly, who blocks the door with a bed she throws at them, trapping them in her room before Carolina blasts the phone just as Molly is about to punch Chase. Nico awakens in a pile of witches after a wild night with her new coven, but with no memory of what has happened. Robert brings her to Morgan, who tells her about the changes coming to the world. Nico wants to rescue Alex, but Morgan maintains she needs to mentor her before that can happen. They strike a deal, the staff of one, for assistance in getting Alex out of the dark dimension. Tina Minoru is in a hospital bed, attempting to cast a spell where a nurse, under Morgan's sway, drugs her back to sleep. After the title card, the Runaways regroup at the hostel and Nico retrieves the staff. Carolina and Nico have a fight while the rest try to crack into Alex's computer to let people know the dangers of the Wiz phones. Nico talks her way into her mother's hospital room where she was awake the whole time, and they make quick work of the coven nurse. Morgan watches, then magically deletes the Runaways recording about the Wiz phones made at the Church of Gaborim with the wave of her hand. She dispatches Bronwyn and another witch to deal with them using any means at their disposal. Jeffrey arrives and Morgan gives him a crow necklace with the promise of Alex's return. Nico and Tina arrive to search Morgan's room, and Tina takes Nico's place. The Runaways and Leslie realize their warning has magically disappeared. Tina breaks her husband's crow necklace and Morgan's hold on him. Molly confronts Leslie over the murder of her parents, but Leslie talks her out of revenge with her regret and remorse. Digital Janet explains to Victor and Stacy the Runaways' warning about the Wiz phones was erased by means she can't identify. With 50,000 Wiz phone Corvuses in use in the Los Angeles area, violent crime has spiked in every area they're in use. Victor and Stacy hatch a plan to plant a virus in the phones being prepped for shipment. Bodhi catches up with a moody Molly. Tina has to leave Robert behind as Morgan returns. Victor and Stacy tell Jeffrey about Morgan's plans with the Wiz phones, but he tricks and traps them. Molly confides in Bodhi by showing off her powers. Morgan shows Nico Alex in a mirror as he's being tortured. She needs to bring her the staff right away. Dale, who is now a member of the church, finds the runaways as Bronwyn and the other witch look for them. Robert finds the Darkhold, and Morgan senses Nico's betrayal. She vanishes and retrieves it, which she says is a part of her, from Robert, and then does the magic that healed him. Bodhi's surprise for Molly is selling her out to Bronwyn and the other, who use their magic to subdue Gert, Carolina, Chase, and Dale. Nico and Tina find Robert dying. He gives Nico his glasses, with which he recorded a video of the Darkhold's pages. The supermodel witches tie the rest of the runaways and Stacy and Victor up. Carolina can't use her light to free them. Alone at the hostel, Nico uses the staff to attempt to access the dark dimension, but is interrupted by Cloak and Dagger, who want to know who she is and what she's done.
Pete, let's talk villains in this episode, and we must start with Morgan Le Fay.
Continuing to dig the vibe that Elizabeth Hurley has brought to this show here in terms of personality, in terms of villainy.
This I agree with. I don't know that she has been given lots and lots of kind of mustache twirling, here's my evil plan type stuff. Not that we necessarily need it yet, but fast forward, or rather rewind, you know, 3-4 episodes ago, oh, why aren't we getting more Morgan Le Fay? Now I feel like she's front and center. I feel like the cook time to get to where we were at in terms of her villainy over the season. I'm digging that. I'm realizing maybe there's the thing I've wanted so long for Marvel Netflix and by extension Marvel Hulu, which is chop these seasons up, do 3A and 3B. It appearing that though we had some Morgan Le Fay in the first half of the season, she really has been designed to be a second half villain. I'm digging it all.
Yeah. And when you get to the ancillary villains in this episode, notably Bronwyn and the other witch here, in service of Morgan, this coven of witches, we can even add the nurse to that. The mysterious nature, albeit, you know, we know the Darkhold, if you're paying attention to the larger Marvel Cinematic Universe, that is applied to those under her power.
And I like that the show has its cake and eats it too, and then says, hey, cake is ridiculous, in that we get the whole notion of supermodel witches. I think if you're going to cast Morgan Le Fay and say, all right, who's she hanging with, you do need to go with a certain type of actress, certain type of look to go along with Morgan Le Fay. But then for the show to kind of call itself out and just say, this is slightly ridiculous that everybody is, you know, 5'10 and indeed super model-y. I got a chuckle out of that. And for a show that certainly gives us a diverse presentation across all sorts of levels of diversity, you know, you're going to go with supermodel 20-year-olds that are in the coven and then call yourself out about it. That's fine by me.
And then when you look at Bodhi, somebody we met in the previous episode, who it seemed almost immediate we could trust, and for him to Lando Calrissian Molly here maybe makes it the cruelest stroke of the episode.
Pete, I thought that we as the audience could trust Bodhi, and when there was that villainous reveal, you know what I was left saying? No way, Bodhi, no way. But Pete, enough Point Break references here. In a similar vein, I suppose, we have Chase just dropping his random references to Morpheus and the Matrix and red pills and blue pills. And I almost wonder, Pete, if maybe Chase, who is in the show, 18 years old, I wonder if maybe his words came from somebody, I don't know, in their 40s who enjoyed The Matrix as a late teen or early 20-year-old before becoming, I don't know, maybe the youngest showrunner in the history of network TV in showrunning The OC. Because I felt like somebody in their 40s wrote that reference, forgetting that these are the kids these days, what they're talking about, they're dabbing and whatnot. They don't make random Matrix references.
Only the coolest a member of the target audience of this show is going to get the Matrix reference. Otherwise, it's going to be reduced to, oh, red pill, blue pill. I know that meme. But all right, part of the transitive nature of art is to inform and to help the audience see something they previously didn't, become aware of it. So there you go. I think part of the bigger issue in this episode, so Morgan and the now late Robert Minoru talk about the changes coming to the world. Matt, we are pre 5 years later. Do we have, is there hope of somehow running up against the Snap, the Infinity War Endgame universe?
I mean, I think unfortunately not. I must confess we're at a later point in the filming of this than we were, say, preparing for the beginning of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 6. Early pre-production, pre-pre-production, around the time Endgame came out. Could it incorporate some of those things? Maybe, although we have Jeff Loeb on the record as saying, essentially, you know, washing hands of lack of knowledge because of the split inside Marvel, just roll with it. I guess I'm not expecting, in these waning days of Marvel TV, in here, 307 is in the books. I have yet to see 308, 9, or 10. I don't expect them to do any tie-in to, frankly, a movie that came out, what, 18 months ago? I think it's just going to pass by and that's it.
We have another parent die, Matt, in Robert Minoru joining Catherine Wilder. Who's next? Is anybody safe? Can they all be resurrected via computer program like Janet Stein?
Well, first of all, harumph to the to having Janet Stein come back in such a wacky way. To me, it still is tonally out of place with the rest of this show, out of place with Marvel TV. Okay, maybe not. Especially, Pete, there's still people vehemently angry that Marvel brought back Coulson because he should have stayed dead, because the second or third time he died, really, that was the one that got you right here. So I know that there's ridiculous stuff out there. I know that, you know, it's a comic book TV show. I'm not crazy about Janet living in the computer. Hollow style, Max Headroom, you know, with the little...
Now I can't unsee that.
Well, you know what? That's because they're overdoing slightly. They're overdoing the whole, like, you know, all of a sudden there's static, static, static. Like, that kind of buffering of Janet Stein, who now lives in The Matrix. Okay, fine, whatever. But, Pete, back to your larger point. I continue to be bemused, and I know I've said this before, I expected everybody to be gone in the early episodes, and the fact that there still are intact parents around, some of them on a redemptive arc, I was not expecting that. I like these characters, or I like these actors, even as villainous as the characters are. So do I expect more parents to die? Yes, absolutely. Do I expect necessarily that they're all gone by 3:10? I want to say the trajectory that the show is on says, no, you're not going to kill them all off. Flip side, Pete, regardless of whether they knew the final season, et cetera, at what point do we go, you know, Luke Skywalker post the burning of the homestead, you know, left a boy, now back a man. At what point are these children no more because they don't have parents and need to be the adults? I feel like 3:10 could be a good deadline for that.
All I know is if they harm a hair on the heads of the York's parents, we riot.
I certainly agree. I continue to enjoy Dale's wackiness, and I think that he somehow is the least complicit in all of this. Mm-hmm. And Pete, all the way going back to the beginning of season one, I have feelings for Stacey York that I can't quite understand, but I know I continue to feel.
The Darkhold again in this episode here and starting to enlighten us a little bit more. So the Darkhold last seen prior to Runaways going with Robbie Reyes, Ghost Rider, to hell. Morgan saying that she's come from hell, that hell is now here. So we're lining this up more with our expectations if you are following the larger Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yes. If we see at some point in the future, 3, 4, 5 years down the line, if we see some sort of expansion of Marvel on TV, you know, I know there's the Disney Plus stuff coming. And I mean, they're exciting titles, don't get me wrong, but 6 episodes of Falcon and the Winter Soldier. All right, that's going to be cool. 6 episodes of WandaVision, that's going to be cool. If we reach a point where we're getting to these higher episode counts, let there be this kind of crossover. Let there be lessons learned from the DC CW shows. Let's have maybe, when I sit down and watch 308 later today, Pete, how awesome would it be to have, you know, previously on Marvel TV and you see Robbie Reyes taking it or something like that. Or let's have, if because maybe showing him on the previously on is going to, you know, trigger a $10,000 residual for the actor or something like that. I don't know. Let's at the very least have Morgan can achieve that in dialogue. There I was in hell and the Ghost Rider came. Or if you can't say Ghost Rider because that's now expensive because it's going to hit you for the original creators. There was a man with a skull. Like, whatever it is, give it to us who have been here for everything. Please, Runaways, don't wimp out here and don't say, you know, oh, I got it. You know, I got it from hell. That's not really making a connection. Go the one sentence further to give us that little sliver.
Not so much a theory, but just the slightest bit of a finger wag here. So when the majority of the Runaways are captured at the end of the episode, Carolina can't use her magic. Feels a little bit too much of a deus ex machina. You are trapped and no powers because of magic.
Well, Pete, there's some things that we say in these podcasts where I worry that hardcore listeners are going to be like, oh, they're saying that thing again. But I'm going to say something again. Your concern here could be solved by one sentence of dialogue. Oh, my powers aren't working. Must be a spell. Okay. I mean, she can.
Well, in fairness, that is said. But it feels overly contrived that, oh, you have a superpower, but I have just said your superpower is blocked by magic. So it is blocked by magic. I feel like we've not had enough magic in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, as funny as that sounds. You know, we would go back to the original Thor movie, magic, of course, being the science we just don't understand yet. But it feels overly contrived as a story obstacle. Oh, you cannot free us because magic.
Well, how's this for an alternative one-line solution? You think our magic is only limited to Earthers or to humans? Like just something like that where you go, oh, okay, that doesn't make me understand it much more, but look, she's not just Morgan Le Fay isn't just a human magician. It's international. It's got Prime One Day shipping, and it's good on this planet and elsewhere. Wow, she's so versatile. Like, again, a one sentence solution.
We've been waiting and waiting and waiting. And I almost feel like maybe they shouldn't have told us it was coming. But because of the nature of Hollywood, i.e., ego, we get in the credits of this episode the inclusion of the characters who show up in the last 15 seconds.
Is it Ego or Pete? It has crossed my mind throughout the years when this type of thing occurs in terms of the credited person who's credited. Sometimes, you know, early on in the guest star credits, that only shows up in the last 5 seconds sometimes. Could be a union thing. Could be a, you know, like an actor of a certain esteem, and anything they show up in must be credited because they're not, you know, not even as lowly as, you know, Joe, the ice cream scooper. Oh, but P.S. Joe, the ice cream scooper still gets credit because he has a spoken part, because that's a union thing as well. So maybe that's, I don't want to say that they're hamstrung there, but maybe that's just a reality of doing business with these actors in terms of their kind of, you know, union rights versus, oh man, I can't believe he demanded to have his name there. I don't know. I'm just offering that as a thought. Well, Pete, this an episode filled with magic. And if there is a sorcerer supreme in the podcasting realm, is it Fred from the Netherlands? Let's find out.
Hello, Matt and Pete and all listeners to Fantastic Geek. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Marvel's Runaways Season 3, Episode 7. Okay, let's start with a major medical nitpick. When we see Tina in this medical facility and she's laying on the bed, her IV fluid is not dripping. And then she tries to do a spell, and then the nurse comes in and changes the IV fluid to dripping. But if you see this regulator in that transparent tube, she's actually closing it, and then it starts to drip. Huh? What? I'm always amazed how TV series don't get the medical stuff right. And this is such an easy one. But anyhow, Tina seems to be smarter than you think. She faked that she fell asleep, and she probably stopped the IV herself, because when later Nico is coming in, the IV fluid is not dripping anymore. Bad nurse anyhow, she should have noticed that. When I'm in the nitpicky mode, next nitpick is that Stacy says when Victor and she are locked up in that room by Jeffrey, she says, "Guess that hideous crow necklace should have been a giveaway." Well, when they walk in the corridor and meet Jeffrey, the necklace is not there. And I checked the length of the necklace and how far Jeffrey's shirt was open when they still walked in the corridor. He was not wearing it. And then when he closed the door, it was suddenly there. I will put a picture on the Facebook page. Okay, sorry guys, next nitpick. Robert discovers Morgan Le Fay's secret room. First nitpick is, in that room there are many, many candles burning. Okay, she's a witch, whatever. But I think it's strange for a secret room to have all day candles burning. But whatever. Next thing is, why is this a secret room if there is a window in the background? If you look at the outside of the building, you of course will know that there is some extra room there. Okay, getting Cloak and Dagger at the end. Unfortunately, I never saw that series, so I hope there will not be too many cross-references, because just binging Cloak and Dagger would be too much for me. But for people who did watch that, I can imagine it's a nice crossover. That was all for this episode. Greetings, all the best, Fred from the Netherlands.
Pete, when I was but a lad, I remember getting the book, The Nitpicker's Guide to Star Trek The Next Generation, and it was a lot of the types of things that Fred brought up, of course, dealing with, I want to say, the first 5 seasons or so of TNG. This was some guy in the Midwest who, you know, found these things, had, you know, thought it was humorous, wrote a book, got it published, etc. That then spun into Classic Trek and the movies and all this. So Fred might be onto something here, keeping an eye out for it. Here's what I want to propose, Pete. Obviously the bar a little lower now in terms of, you know, it being easier to publish. Fred's digital book that could be Fred's nitpick guide to Marvel Television. Start with Runaways, and he can move out some of the other shows that he's watching, your Agent Carters, your Shields, etc. And then maybe it could end back with Cloak and Dagger, which Fred has not seen. Do you think Fred would enjoy Cloak and Dagger?
I do. I do think he would enjoy it. He's going to get a taste for these characters. I was wondering as I was watching, okay, what's the reception going to be for Runaways fans unfamiliar either with the comic versions or the TV versions of Cloak and Dagger? And obviously there's going to be some exposition in the next episode we'll podcast to bring people up to speed. But I think others would enjoy it. I think perhaps it's a way for people to go back and check out that 2-season run, which has now been canceled, and this appearance was, in the offing prior to that cancellation. On Fred's particular nitpicks, big credit to him. He is a geneticist. We sometimes talk about, you know, what Fred does for a living. He's let us know. So he's obviously qualified to let us know about the medical nitpick. I did not pick it up. And you're talking about somebody whose father was a physician for almost 40 years and my mother a nurse. The second one I definitely noticed, though. I was looking at Jeffrey. Okay, no necklace on. We know that he had been given or offered a necklace, but that we don't see it visible. And then nothing makes your necklace visible like opening the door to a room where you're going to trap two other adults.
And I think, too, I mean, we're seeing here two different levels of attention to the production, both of which Fred is rightly calling out. You know, kind of as me on my couch, I'm a bit more willing to excuse the medical thing just because it's not the operational nature of her drip is not necessary. That's not the focus of the scene. Let's put it like that. But to keep track of basic continuity of the necklace, that is somebody's job. It is somebody's job to know, you know, it's called continuity supervisor. It's their job to know that. I would say too, it's not to take away from the continuity of the drip. Just does the continuity person necessarily know how one of these bags works? Okay, maybe not. But they do know how necklaces hang around necks from one scene to the next when characters are supposed to be wearing them. So, Pete, the makers of this episode getting a well-earned finger wag from Fred.
Yet another reason they need to put Fred on the payroll.
Absolutely. Well, Pete, with only 3 episodes of Runaways to go, each episode has been brought to you, brought to our listeners, by those who support us on patreon.com/fantasticgeek. That support meaning so, so much to us, particularly keeping the back catalog up and the future catalog evolving.
Yes, whether it is on Apple Podcasts, where you can find much of our work, or on fantasticgeek.com, where you can find all of our work. And that's because Apple Podcasts limits us to what we can put up there. As of a recent check, only things beginning in February of 2019 are up there, because we've just recorded so many podcasts this year. But everybody who contributes to patreon.com/fantasticgeek helps to keep that backlog available for everybody. Go to fantasticgeek.com and benefit from all of that.
Pete, all sorts of goodies there on the Patreon website, but one is free. How can people talk to you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at Peter, PIETERJKETELAR, KETELAAR, 10,992 followers. Can't be wrong.
And while I am personally on Twitter as Looking Back Lost, do be in touch with the podcast. Comment on FantasticGeek.com. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Gmail, where we are Fantastic Geek as well. But wait, Pete, there's more.
Facebook.com/FantasticGeek, all one word, with the P and the H. Like it today.
Well, Pete, for those listening on the Pop Culture Podcast feed, we will be back tomorrow to talk the season 1 finale of Mandalorian. If you're looking for more Runaways, either there or right on the Runaways feed, we will be back on Sunday to talk episode 308. With that, I will say adios to all the listeners and give you the final word.
I knew we should have come in 2 cars.